Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
Welcome to the Monday edition of the Deep Dive. It was a wild week nine. Some crazy results in the books. Some really close calls. I'm staring down the barrel of a 4-5-1 week with one left to go. So, and actually, I didn't tell you this in our show prep, Andy, but this is a pretty important game for my overall record right now. But yeah, well, I need this win. I'm on the Packers tonight, and we're 9 weeks into the season, and if the Packers win, then I'm barely in the plus units for the season, and if the Packers fail to cover, I will be in the negative after 9 weeks, which is going to be the worst position I've been in going back probably about 4 years through 9 weeks. Usually I make most of my hay early in the season and then kind of fade late. I'm going to have to flip things around this year and finish strong after this. The last couple weeks have been real tough for your boy. How about you? How'd you do yesterday?
So. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Seattle dinked me on a teaser that it looked like I had. And boy, Seattle was marching up and down the field and stopping and missing. And I'm a Viking
fan. Let's start there, man. Yeah. I would say overall, week nine kind of sucked. I don't think really you can make much debate about that. There was not a lot of good football played outside of a couple of teams that continued to overperform the likes of the Eagles and the Rams and the Jags. I don't think that those teams really are going to be in the conversation for the Super Bowl. I'm sorry if you're a fan of those teams. I think they'll probably all be in the playoff hunt come week 16. I don't expect any of them to fade hard. I think they have, you know, they have kind of set themselves up into advantageous situations as of now. And if you were holding futures on those teams, then congratulations, because there's going to be massive value as we come down the stretch here. On the flip side, this, you know, maybe of the interesting games, that Seattle game was probably the one that you want to key on. It was unwatchable for about three quarters. Seattle got what? They got a safety. They missed three field goals in the first half. They gave up a lousy touchdown drive to the Redskins, and they're losing at halftime 7-2. And man, it was everything I could do to like keep my finger off of the confirm button to unload like my account on Seattle at halftime, because we talked about how this Redskins are such a fade worthy second half team. But there was something about that game and the situation and the three missed field goals. You just knew, like, after a kicker missed three field goals, the team's not going to trust them to go after, you know, to kick anymore. And so basically, you know, it was going to come down to Seattle scoring touchdowns to win the game. And, you know, sure enough, they got it done, but they left a little bit too much time on the clock for the Redskins. There was a little bit of a controversial going for two or not to go for two. I think they made the right decision to go for two personally. But then, so lo and behold, that Blair Walsh was never going to make a field goal in the rest of that game anyway. You know how this goes when you miss three field goals like that. And a couple of those were real, real makeable. You're not going to count on this guy to be kicking a 48 yard winner in those conditions after what had happened to him throughout the rest of the day. So they needed a touchdown there at the end, or they really needed to stop Kirk Cousins from gaining 80 yards in two plays, which you would have thought would have been doable for the.
I didn't see the first play, and then I missed. I was flipping back, and I'm like, what is happening? Why?
How is this
possible? I think my last leg of my teaser was Seattle -2.5, which, boy.
Seemed imminently there for you, man.
Eagles -1, Saints -1.
Oh, my God.
So
those couldn't have made it.
Didn't sweat that. Boy, I've been sweating Seattle at 3 o'clock every damn week. I got to quit them. They owe me season tickets at this point.
The good news is Seattle's not at 3 o'clock this week. They're on Thursday Night Football. They're heading down to Arizona to play presumably Drew Stanton at quarterback. We have for some reason they're calling it undecided right now, but Russell Wilson versus Drew Stanton, Thursday Night Football. The Arizona Cardinals are kind of a mystery to me. They, I thought they overperformed yesterday in kicking the tar out of the Niners. What was that final? 20-10
20-10 Yeah, they.
Yeah, they.
It's not like it's not
they
like
were.
They lit the world on fire yesterday. They.
No. The Niners defense.
They beat really Beathard.
Bad. Ugh, they're bad. Yeah, and Beathard was awful. He was just dreadful.
I haven't seen any updated news on Garoppolo. If they're gonna.
Supposedly they're going with Beathard this week. I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
it's only Monday.
Right. In what is likely to be the worst game of the season, the Giants head to San Francisco this week. That one looks like it's going to go off as San Francisco is a small fade or a pick 'em. If by some miracle the Giants actually do off with his head on McAdoo, I'll probably be backing the Giants this week. But that's probably better just to stay away and avoid the nonsense. Overall, Week 10 up and down the slate, kind of ugly. Before we get too down on the
NFL, this is like Baylor, Kansas. I mean, you got really shitty teams here.
This is the Baylor, Kansas of the NFL. The Giants, the Giants who have completely quit on their coach. We called this in the pantheon of where we were right and where we were wrong last week. Calling the Giants quitting, particularly calling the defense out for quitting on McAdoo, we were very, very right. We'll get to where we were wrong in a second here, because I'm going to go through these results kind of in a fun order here. The Giants have quit. Please fire Ben McAdoo.
Who's Bob McAdoo?
I don't know. Who's Bob McAdoo? I think I know a Bob McAdoo in my life, which is why I always think of him as Bob. Anyway, Ben McAdoo needs to be summarily relieved of his duties as the head coach of the Giants. I think if they do that, you would see a nice bump and a nice kind of opportunity to back them down the stretch of the season, because they still do have talented players on defense. They just don't give a shit trying for this coach that they hate. One of the stink-worthy games of the weekend there, Giants at San Francisco. Let me circle back on Seattle, Arizona for a second and talk about how important this game is to Seattle. So Seattle, they are really wasting some opportunities here, man. They look like a legit team. They look like a team that would be a formidable team in the playoffs, but they have now given a wide open look to the Rams to steal the West. And Seattle, you know, if they struggle against Arizona next week, if they have on deck, they have another one of these weird situations where Seattle is going to get 10 days rest in between Thursday to Monday stretch. They go at Arizona this week, and then the following week they host the Falcons. So they're going to have two games that they should win by you know, relatively comfortable margins, but you never freaking know with this team. And these are important games for them, because if they are all of a sudden fighting for a wild card with the likes of the Cowboys and who else would be in the wild card chase? Maybe the Panthers.
Panthers right now are 6-3.
Cowboys, Panthers. Yeah, I think you're shaping up. You're going to see two wild cards goes like the Panthers, the I guess the Falcons aren't totally out of it, but
they're
maybe they're
four.
The,
but you know, if they beat Dallas this week, they're in the discussion again. It doesn't really appear like the NFC North will have an also ran.
If the
Packers can't get it done with Hundley, and the Lions only have 3 wins right now, 4 after net,
yeah,
I suppose.
I'm ready to write off the Lions. I'm ready to write off.
Well, of course you are.
Saying this. Of course I am, because I'm ready to write off Lions because I want them to lose tonight, and I need the Lions to lose because I have a lot at stake in some of the prop wagers I made preseason. I have them as alt unders in a bunch of my win total parlays. If the Lions would just go away, that would be terrific. I think you really are talking about a pretty narrow race now for the wild card between Seattle Dallas and Carolina in the NFC. I think the Saints, man, the Saints look like they are on cruise control, man. Their defense looks legit. They are all of a sudden not an overtime team. I don't know what happened.
But
the Saints defense has stepped up tremendously, and granted, it didn't hurt that the Tampa Bay Bucs have apparently quit on the season.
They quit. I want to start believing in the Saints, but I look back at the six wins and I don't see excellence. You know, you see, like, you had hurt Cam, you had terrible spot for the Dolphins with the traveling in London.
Absolutely.
The Lions
game, absolutely right.
Lions game had 10 turnovers. So there's all kinds of variance there. You played Hundley, Trubisky, and a team that quit. But you got to win those games. You know, you can be in a position to win a game and still not pull it off. Like, they did win these six games, and they lost to the Vikings and the Patriots. Listen, you know, those are teams that, what are they, each sitting on six wins?
Those were relatively competitive games too.
Well, Patriots game maybe.
Yeah, I think back to the Patriots game. The Patriots covered that game, and they were damn lucky.
They got a lot of
calls. The Saints were pretty sloppy on defense, and you know that was a deceiving final score. So the Saints though, but you know, let's say the Saints get a two seed. Let's say that they lock up the South, by no means is that guaranteed because the Saints have a lot of tough divisional games left. They're 2-0 in division, right? They've beaten the Panthers and they've beaten the Bucks.
They've lost to another current divisional leader in the Vikings, where if it comes
to a
couple of 10-6, 11-5 teams, that's the ultimate first tiebreaker.
Right. Okay. Okay. So we could see a situation where
I don't know that they play the Eagles, which I don't know if they can play that. Yeah. Playoff tiebreakers now. We're getting carts are being put way before horses.
Yeah, I know. No. I feel you. But in terms of kind of assessing the status of the division leaders right now, the Eagles are obviously way out ahead with only having one loss. You have the Rams, who may or may not be legit. You have the Minnesota Vikings, who I think we both believe in, not just because you're a Vikings fan and because I have massive futures out on the Vikings, but I think they are legitimately a top three defense in the NFL right now.
Jilted and not believe in them, because that's how I usually go. You've let me down so many times. But no, that defense, boy, that really, if the other team isn't going to score more than, you know, 14, 20 points, it doesn't take a whole lot to get the win if you can go down there and score a few times. Thank God we got rid of Blair Walsh.
Yeah, boy. So you got Minnesota. You know it's coming, though. You know Seattle's going to end up with a wild card spot. They're going to end up with the fifth seed or the sixth seed as a wild card.
And they're going to be in Minnesota. Detroit coming up on the schedule here. I don't even want to think about that shit. Jesus. Yeah, that would be.
You know,
that would be,
man.
Yeah. Well, long time between now and the playoffs, but I do have
actually,
futures on the.
You know
Seahawks,
what?
So.
You know what? I gotta walk that back because there is a very, very
Jesus.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I gotta walk that back because there is a very real shot that Blair Walsh is not on the roster in December in Seattle. He is, he is one more shank away from getting his walking papers, I believe. You know. Keep your eyes out on their, you know, story floating around in Seattle this week that they're bringing in kickers. Let me ask you about Minnesota. Actually, looking forward to this one, this upcoming week. Maybe the best top three game this week will be the early game on Sunday between Minnesota and Washington. Minnesota's coming off their bye. Minnesota's coming off their bye. Washington's coming off that miraculous win in the Northwest. Washington and Kirk Cousins, as we've talked about in the past, generally plays a little better at home. Minnesota's defense is going to be, you know, it's going to be rested and healthy and potentially give Kirk Cousins everything he can ask for. Are you seeing, I want to bring this up just because this was something that stung me in the ass last year. Minnesota came out of their bye flat,
awful, dead flat,
last year.
And what, Zimmer's a good coach that he knows that that happened last year and he's got to do something different. That said, the Redskins are 4-4. I think, you know, the way it's sitting right now, if the playoffs started, it'd be what, Cowboys, Seahawks, Panthers get, or Cowboys, two wild cards. Let's not go wild with that. But it'd be Cowboys and Panthers right now. Like they're sitting at like the 9 spot. So they need a couple wins here. This is big. You fall to 4-5, you're really starting to fade out of that wild card picture. You gotta get your wins at home close. You know, this is a huge game for them. I don't know if I want to touch it too much early. You gotta see about the Jordan Reed. That was another thing that made me lean Seattle with the Jordan Reed out, but apparently
And same, but you got to, I mean, this Minnesota-Washington is really, really similar the way these teams match up against each other as the Seattle-Washington, you know? Mm-hmm. The Minnesota's got this pass rush that can get after the quarterback, and Washington's O-line is all busted up, and Washington, you know, is going to have, you know, the same kind of, you know, the same kind of advantages in terms of the, you flip the script, Minnesota's O-line is not amazing, but they're good enough so far this year, and you got to, you know, you got a Minnesota sticking with Case Keenum, right? We haven't heard any whispers that we're going to surprise Teddy Bridgewater on Washington.
Nothing yet. Who knows with that? But yeah, it looks it's Keenum's team right now.
I think they should be going with Keenum personally, but we'll have to keep an eye on all of this. All right, so that's an interesting one. I'm looking probably at the under there, under 42.5, and I'm going to keep an eye on the weather in Washington, and I'm going to keep an eye on reports of the playing surface and whatnot, because that has the feel for the same sort of game we saw between Seattle and Washington. Yeah, we're getting into that time of the season. November and December, games in Washington, games in Pittsburgh, generally you have just a mess of a surface, and that ends up pushing numbers down. So it looks like a low total. They hung 42.5. I could see that going under, though, especially if, you know, there's a little bit of rust on Minnesota coming out of their bye. So that'll be one to watch. Thinking in the NFC for a second, there's a what do you think of the Dallas-Atlanta matchup? Atlanta really, really should have taken that game over the total. That was one of the tougher losses I've sustained in a while. There was, I guess their kicker got hurt.
NFC South.
Jones dropped that wide open touchdown. You ever seen Julio Jones drop a touchdown that was more catchable? That was
not like that. Boy, you put me out there with one arm, I catch that one.
Seriously, he could have stopped his run and turned around and made a backyard touchdown, you know, backyard football catch there, and sure enough, it bounces off his every part of his freaking upper body, and he face plants in the end zone, and then that was pretty much, you know, the total was DOA at that point. And
kind of like everybody in the Raiders game, all the Raiders, just bouncing off their chest. Yeah, if you had the Raiders,
boing boing. Yeah, right. Raiders need some. The Raiders need to evaluate their receiver position somehow. The except for Jared Cook, apparently, is all world tight end all of a sudden. Anyway, Dallas comes off a big win at KC. Somehow, after going down 17-14, the Dallas defense shut KC out for 1.5 quarters. Dallas played ball control offense. They ate clock. They scored when they needed to. They win 28-17, hosting the Chiefs. And the Chiefs, they clearly ran out of gas, especially on defense. That team looks like they desperately needed this bye that they're heading into, and we're going to be all over the Chiefs coming out of this bye. People are kind of whispering, Chiefs are frauds. I still think the Chiefs win the West. I think still think they're in the conversation for a top two seed in the AFC. So we're going to be, you know, keeping our eye on them. They have faced one of the tougher schedules, if not the toughest schedule to this point in the season. And I would expect that you're going to see a lot of opportunities for them to rack up W's down the home stretch here. And that will start with them out of their bye week 11. I think they play the Giants. Something crazy like that. I can't remember.
I will have to look, see if that's it. But let's say it's in Kansas City. The Giants lose to San Francisco. Coach is fired. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is Eli stays healthy. And then they go to Kansas City as what, 11 and a half, 12, 13 point dog?
No way.
I mean,
that number is going to be
and a half?
Ridiculous. It's going to be big. Because what were the Giants heading to Denver?
God, it was like 13.
13.
Yeah. Geez.
Okay. It'll be right there.
Have we had over 14? I think we've had one.
I think there's been one. It was. I think the Raiders versus the Jets might have been pretty close.
Yeah, maybe there was
one other one.
Patriots Jets was right on 13 and a half, 14, depending where you got it. Because that's where it was. Patriots. The Jets were up 14-0, so they're up 20-1 against the spread and almost blew it. 28 against the spread and almost blew it. I had them that day.
There was another one that was that high, like Niners at the Seahawks, maybe week two. Anyway, there was one that was almost that high. Let's put a pin in KC for now, and I want to talk about Dallas Atlanta a little bit here. So, one of the other good games this week, Dallas Atlanta afternoon slot here. It's in Atlanta. Atlanta's been on the road now 3 straight weeks. They failed to cover 3 weeks in a row. The loss yesterday at Carolina was not only like particularly impactful in their playoff hopes. They are now third in the NFC South, and they have lost now to both. Have they haven't played New Orleans yet, have they?
They haven't played the Saints yet, I don't think. No, they have not played the Saints, but they lost to the Buccaneers. Have 2 wins and one's against the Falcons.
Unbelievable. That's amazing. So the Falcons now are finally home after 3 weeks on the road, not covering. The bookmakers are hanging the Falcons as 3-point favorites with Dallas coming to town. Dallas is cooking in every
afternoon. Have you seen that yet? They're doing the thing with the checking of the injunction. The ruling will come down whether the injunction to stay the suspension that was ruled on in the other court, blah blah blah, vis-a-vis. Yeah, I don't fully understand everything that's going on, but I guess there'll be another ruling Thursday afternoon. So maybe. Okay. Yeah, maybe like if you're thinking Dallas or Atlanta, maybe unless you know somebody in the court, I don't know if I'd touch that one too early.
The number makes it look like maybe somebody does know something because they hung Atlanta -3. They hung Atlanta -3, and I'm seeing 80% of this is the most bet game of the week by far. By the way,
sure.
there's 15 times more bets on Dallas Atlanta right now than there is on some of these other lesser. Cincinnati, Tennessee.
Chargers, Jacksonville?
Believe it or not. Can you believe that? Yeah, no. So they have the highest early volume of the volume. It's 80-20 split to Dallas, and the line has moved 3 cents in the direction of Atlanta. So somebody may know something. Let me just do a sidebar here. True or false, this Zeke Elliott suspension story has been one of the least enjoyable, most frustrating in terms of how it affects handicaps and lines and movements and what to expect week in and week out and how to overall, understand the scope of the season. This has been one of the least enjoyable things that has happened in years.
It just feels like a foregone conclusion. The precedent was set with the Tom Brady case, I think, where he's going to get suspended. Just suck it up, take it. You've got good running backs, get it out of the way. I mean, I don't know how it would work if this drug on, if it ended up with four games left, would they say, well, you're serving playoff games? That would be a terrible way to DJ Khaled, you just played yourself.
It seems entirely possible at this point, because it continues to drag on. It continues to get bogged down in legalese that no one can understand. Depending on who you get your information from among NFL experts, it's like, he's going to play, he's not going to play. He's finally suspended up. We'll see him again in December. Psych. Oh wait, no, this is stayed until next year. Like it's so frustrating. I absolutely hate it. And on top of it, it's like, it's incurring this enormous, like, underlying mutiny that's going on between the owners and the commissioner. And, you know, hey, if this is what finally gets Goodell out of the commissionership and we get somebody like competent in there, a la like Adam Silver for the NBA, then so be it. But this is just the worst. I hate it. I hate it. And I desperately want this story to go away.
I'd like him to get suspended, just because I think it's going to happen. I think that's the final result. Just hopefully Thursday they just say, all right, we're done. We're done. This is, you know, you're out of appeals. You're going to the electric chair. No call from the governor.
Yeah.
And just get it out of the way. What is it? It'll be week 10, 10, 11, 12. Yeah. And then lose them for the second half of the season, part of it, and move on with your life. And I don't have to hear about it every goddamn week.
I know, right? Here's the other funny wrinkle for you. So they opened a total of 53. 92% of the bets were placed early on the over, and the total dropped to 50.5. So somebody out there either is taking a swing expecting the suspension to come, or is or knows something specific about the way that this ruling is going to work out, and we are not going to see Zeke Elliott on Sunday. So you're looking at the market.
Might have been a bigger sharp bet on that under.
Just reading the market, somebody knows something. That number down to 50.5 is, I mean, 53 to 50.5 is not like a big swing by any chance.
No,
when it's that high, it's not like we're crossing like specifically key numbers here. All that said, we desperately need to have some kind of firm understanding about what's going to happen here with the Cowboys and how they're going to approach these games if we're ever going to handicap them again. And it sucks when you have one pretty interesting game on the one out of three pretty interesting games in the schedule, and you have no clue if the star running back for one of the teams is going to play or not. And we got to read the legal experts' opinions on this, which have, again, nothing to do with the facts in this case. And it's just, it's just an ongoing mess.
And obviously that was the only game that you want to watch that one, because
of course,
I mean, unless something goofy happens, you see the Rams at home probably blowing out Savage. And then nobody wants to watch the Giants Niners. That's not a thing to watch.
You have
to explain to my kids what's going on there. Why are we watching this, Dad?
Crazy. Yeah, so week 10, you have potentially.
Maybe later in the week we'll know a little more on that, some clarity on that.
Yeah. Yeah, did you watch the end of the Houston Indy game? Did you see? Because, okay, first of all, the early games yesterday in the Red Zone channel were awful. There was virtually nothing compelling going down the stretch unless you had a bet on the Tennessee Baltimore over. That was like the only spreader or outcome that was really kind of in flux at the end of that game. Savage was kind of all right in the second half, I have to say. I thought that the Indy defense kind of stepped up and made some plays to keep them from scoring that game-winning touchdown. I kind of want to back Houston here. And, this is coming from someone who I'm about to do my biggest mea culpa of the season in a second. But this is
coming. I can't imagine what game you're going to be talking about. But I don't know. I get the angle. I get what you're saying, but they got to watch. Now you got another full good game of film on Savage and how they want to run that offense. And you've got a pretty good defensive coordinator at home.
That's
coming
true.
off an easy win. Like
right. Playing his own team.
I would be very nervous about backing Houston in this game. I don't know. I'm not saying I want to lay a big chunk of points in the Rams, but I see them destroying Savage from
You know what?
From a defensive line standpoint, I worry about him,
Andy,
as a person.
Andy, I think you just made a very compelling case for the under in this game. I worry about the Rams.
Yeah, 41-0 Rams.
Yeah, right. 41-0 Rams. Gets that thing home. I worry about the Rams a little bit, kind of coming back to earth after the just – they had
a picture-perfect.
They had a picture-perfect performance against the Giants team. And it's so tempting to say, ah, well, fuck it, the Giants quit. You know, and that's why the Rams got the duel. The Rams were playing against Hockey Lee and against the Giants defense for a lot of that first half, and they couldn't stop them. There was like third and 33 point in time where there was third and 33, and it was like, well, I thought the Rams might have gotten a little more points there. I needed the over, so I was pulling for it. And they run like a brilliant they run the motion offense. They get a guy uncovered. They find him in the middle of the field. He runs like 60 yards for a touchdown. It was awesome. And they hit Sammy Watkins deep. They were all over the place bombing against the Giants. I would expect them to come down back to earth a little bit here. We mentioned last week on the Wednesday pod, they've had a little bit of a bizarre like month travel wise where they went at Jacksonville directly to London, had a bye, and then they went at New York. So they've been playing really early, and they probably have kind of, you know, tumbled their gyros a little bit, I would say, especially if, you know, you consider, you know, the time change and everything. Now here they are finally back in LA this week after not playing a game at home since like the early October time frame. So I wonder if there's going to be some impact on the team a little bit there. And I would expect to see it manifest itself in the offense a little bit. So I think that the under is probably a pretty interesting look here. It opened at 47 and down to 46.5. And if it continues to drift down, I think that would be an interesting sign. You got Wade Phillips up against his old team, Houston Texans. Can he get a little extra motivation out of his troops? Can we see the Rams defense just smother Savage and company? That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, Houston got one of their scores off of a was that a blocked punt? Or I didn't watch a lot of that game because I had Houston, or I had Indianapolis, and I really didn't want to watch it anyway. I think there, yeah, it was a block kick for a touchdown. Same. So it's not like the offense.
No, they had who got the block kick? I think Indy got the block kick for block punt for a touchdown. I can't remember. No, they had a strip sack for a touchdown. There was one busted play where they defensive player for Houston picked it up and ran untouched for 50 yards for a touchdown. Let's kind of touch on anything else yesterday that really popped for you. The Broncos maybe worth talking about a little bit here.
We don't have
to. So when I woke up on Sunday, first of all, last week on the pod, I was saying I might need help because I actively placed a bet on Brock Osweiler. And it turns out that was a true statement. And it almost got worse, believe it or not. I woke up on Sunday and I was like telling myself, man, you remember the last time Brock Osweiler started, he was frisky against the Patriots. He almost got a win on the road in Foxborough. I think he almost covered the spread, or he did cover the spread on the road in Foxborough in the divisional round of the playoffs. Like, this guy is, you know, he's not that bad. Like, and this was such a good spot for Denver, like buy low, sell high. I really thought the defense was in serious support and step with the switch in the quarterback, and you would see a more inspired performance out of them because of the switch. And I almost was like, man, there's one play I want to bump up to two units today. It might be Denver. And then 15 minutes before kickoff, I don't know if you saw the story floated. 15 minutes before kickoff, there was a note that Denver considering Paxton Lynch for week 10. And I was like, I just got the chills. Went cold. Like, oh God, this is not going to go well. Like, if they had a week of prep with Osweiler and they are now floating a story that they may switch again for the following week, like, this is going to be a full-on disaster. I didn't buy out, even though I had some points that I could have bought out. And lo and behold, Osweiler from the first snap was throwing interceptable passes, then went from interceptable passes to not catchable by anyone passes. And Philadelphia absolutely feasted on that mess of a team. And at various points in the first half, it looked like the Denver defense was just like, we can't do this. We quit. And they at least came out in the second half and played a little bit more inspired football. But it wasn't enough to get it anywhere close to closing to get in that ticket to the window. So that Denver bet on Osweiler on the road against the best team, at least currently playing the best team in football, will go down as my worst bet of 2017, I believe. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I would agree that was a terrible bet. That was an awful idea. You shouldn't have done that. And yeah, they
oh my God, he was, man, so bad.
I mean, I guess it's kind of like, well, you had Elway and you got Manning for a bit, and now you're just gonna. Nobody gets all the great quarterbacks for too long. You know, you had Steve Young and Joe Montana, and then when you have a drop off like that, it just sucks to watch a team like that, because they just don't. I don't think they know what they're doing. Like they just keep going back and forth between them, and none of it's working. Just stick with somebody, ride it out, and I mean, try to find someone for next year, I guess. I guess financially, Osweiler's getting paid by the Browns anyway. But
yeah, you know, so who deserves a very, very critical evaluation at this point is John Elway. John Elway, the personnel director. My goodness. You drafted Brock Osweiler a pick before Russell Wilson. Who went after Russell Wilson? Kirk Cousins? That was a whole run of like relatively decent Tyrod Taylor, I think, maybe in that draft as well. Anyway, there was a whole run of relatively effective quarterbacks that came right after Brock Osweiler. You also traded up to draft Paxton Lynch in the first round, and why at this point Paxton Lynch is not capable of taking snaps is a question in and of itself, and they've made some pretty flimsy excuses about him being injured and whatnot. But John Elway, if you're going to put together one of the greatest defenses of all time, and you're going to invest all of this in some of these top tier talent on defense, and then you're going to saddle them with a quarterback like we got from Trevor Siemian and now Brock Osweiler and now potentially Paxton Lynch, this isn't going to get it done, man. And you would think of anyone who would know how important the quarterback position would be, it would be a Hall of Fame quarterback, but here we sit, and they are dead in the water. They know they're dead in the water. They know the defense. You can see it on their faces. You can see it in the level of effort that they give out. When every time something terrible happens on offense, that defense takes the field with their heads hung. And it's like, how do you expect to get an A+ performance out of your defense when the offense is giving you an F? Like, it's just, they've done it for too many games now, and it's wearing on these guys. And you can see it
in their way they're playing. Manning wasn't any good that year.
Exactly.
No, he was better than this, but I remember when he retired. And then they traded Osweiler like right away to Houston.
Right away.
And I have family in Denver, and we got the title, but now I don't know what we're doing. And I had to go do some online research about who the hell was still on the roster. And I remember sending a joke text like, I guess your quarterback is this Trevor Siemian guy next year that I've never heard of. And I mean, he's played a lot of games. I'd never heard of that guy. And obviously the Paxton Lynch thing didn't quite work out. Yeah, I don't know what to do with Denver going forward. I don't know if it's a team back ever again.
I really wanted them this week too, man. I really wanted them this week.
It's not like you were alone. A lot of people like that spot, but it was, boy, back-to-back-to-back, too. That's always rough. But it was
the only, so this week,
a bigger number for a good defense is always something that's a little tempting.
Yes, always. So let me ask you then this week. The Patriots are coming off bye.
Yes.
the Patriots, who themselves lived through a little bit of a weird week last week. We didn't really touch on this in the pod because they were on bye. But maybe the most interesting drama surrounding the trade deadline was shipping Jimmy G to San Francisco. And to what degree that was because Kraft put his foot down and said, we are sticking with Tom Brady until the day he retires. And Belichick kind of came out and had that kind of weird cryptic press conference afterwards about how much he loved Jimmy G like it was his freaking son. And so now I wonder a little bit about what's going on in that locker room and the relationship between Brady and Belichick and Kraft right now, and to what degree Belichick kind of, you know, if things don't work out this season, if he isn't, you know, maybe finding himself, you know, another opportunity in the offseason. And kind of keeping my eye on a lot of this stuff, because it looks like Kraft has kind of made his decision. We're riding with Brady until he retires.
And I mean, Brady and company were kind of forced. They had to make a move with him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, they had to. But they had to, they had to decide, are we going to stick with, or basically they had to decide before the trade deadline, are we going to start Tom Brady in 2018? And they decided they will. And so then at that point, you know, Tom Brady and Jimmy G's agent are the same guy. He clearly was like, okay, well, you know, my guy is going, you're going to have to franchise him because we're not going to sign a long-term deal for him to sit, be a backup again next year. And so they send him to San Francisco. I don't know why the hell he's not starting in San Francisco, because you would think with Kyle Shanahan calling the offense, you can figure out the right offense to make something work with Jimmy G this year. But that's a different story entirely. The Patriots head to Denver this week. And they play in a venue and against a team that they traditionally struggle with.
No.
They traditionally struggle big time against Denver, and particularly in Denver. And did you see what they opened this at? They opened this at Pats minus 7.5, and they are giving you plus 105 on that. So basically they are saying, if you want to back the Patriots, you have to have them for over a touchdown, and we will give you juice. So please give us your Patriots money. And 80% of the best plays so far. You can get 7 at minus 125. So basically,
yeah, like, bookmaker, hey, we're gonna make you pay a premium
if you want 7. Okay.
Which, we're gonna wait on that one. I'm gonna look at that one a little later because
I have a really tough time seeing that hook matter. And if you're going to back the Patriots, by all, please do not go minus 7 at minus 125. If you're going to back the Patriots, just take the plus money at 7.5, because this is not going to come down to a hook at 7 as far as I can tell. Either one of two things happens. Either Denver really does come out and play inspired football, New England's flat, and Denver is frisky, and he almost gets an upset, in which case I doubt you're looking at a 7-point loss. You're probably looking at more like a three or one or two, or, you know, something like field goal late that decides this thing. Or Denver really is finally done for the season. The Patriots defense really may be rejuvenated and may be for real now. Granted, they haven't really played anyone that I would consider a tough test. We still sit here and New England is winning football games.
6-2.
They are not conceding a lot of points at all.
No.
They, even though their front seven is looks like an entire list of replacement players from Madden. The Denver with Paxton Lynch, I suppose, as quarterback, does not seem. And if God, Brock Osweiler. I mean,
yeah, I don't know if it matters. I think you're right. If you like him, take him at 7.5 or 8. Either they lose or they blow him out. And if they lose, something strange has happened.
Right. So that's your Sunday night football game, New England against Denver, and that'll be worth watching. I guess let me talk about there's a lopsided total out there too. They hung it at 46 and they hung it at 46. 95% of the bets so far on the under. And it hasn't budged. That one's lopsided too. Not quite as much, but 95.5 for the Denver under. 80-20 for the Buffalo under. And that
I saw both of those unders are just taking, and they're similar, and they're just taking money.
Taking on money, yeah, man. Big time. And that one moved, actually. They opened that one at 48 and down to 46.
Yeah.
Kind of expecting Buffalo.
The St. Daddy's New Orleans.
Yeah.
Like you said earlier, it is a whole different squad as far as
how they play.
Except in that one game against Detroit. But I think there was like 7 defensive touchdowns combined or something.
That was a wacky one.
That was a wild game.
There was punt returns, kick returns. That was a weird game. All
interceptions
all around.
In your own end zone.
Yes.
Remember that? Yep. That was a fun one.
You think the Saints should be favored in Buffalo? I was kind of surprised to see them actually as favored. I would have guessed this would go off as a pick 'em, but it looks like New Orleans -2.
New Orleans.
You're on Saints?
No, you said New England. You just can't get them out of your head.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, right, well.
The
Saints -2, does that seem reasonable? I'm surprised it wasn't pick 'em personally.
I'd almost put it, I'd line this closer to like Buffalo as a short favorite at home. I think this will be very telling of, you know, both of these. You know, is New Orleans, is their defense really coming around? It's not like a prolific offense, but Shady's had some pretty good games, and Tyrod can make you mess with his feet too. So if they can go up there and actually get it done, and the implied total is about, 23-21, something like that. If they go up there and they hold Buffalo to 10 to 14 points, I think that then you really got to start talking. If you can take a defense travels is the old adage, I guess. But let's see if this defense travels into Orchard Park and does something. Then you can really start talking about New Orleans as a serious contender. If they go up there, Buffalo scores 28 on them. And Buffalo's defense is, they're no one to be trifled with for the most part.
Right. This is one where on a beautiful sunny day, on a neutral field, I would lean slightly towards New Orleans, and you put it in Buffalo, and I'd say, okay, well, maybe Buffalo should be pick 'em or a small favor. I agree with you, and I'll probably back Buffalo this week, but it's November, and it's Buffalo, and it's the Saints, and it's Drew Brees, and before you put any bet on this game, before you even start your handicap, really, go ahead and just look at the weather in Buffalo. Get a sense of what the wind conditions are going to be like, what the air temperature is going to be like. Just remember that as good as the Saints offense is, they tend to perform extremely poorly when the conditions are not well.
Good defense. Buffalo does have a good defense, and they did get – I don't know if they got ahead of themselves or what happened there. Maybe looking ahead, but when they gave up 34 to the Jets, so they got to be a little embarrassed. So, whatever a team, and granted their offense wasn't great either. They scored 14 very late, pretty much garbage touchdowns. But a lot of times when a team really struggles with something, obviously that's what they work on in practice. So I look for the Bills to really focus on tightening up that defense, especially against that's Hall of Fame quarterback coming into town. So I think I do lean with the steam on this. I lean under, but again, we'll see what the weather. And it might just keep going down too. If you like that, maybe get it for 45 is not real key, but it could move down.
We were all about the Jets on Thursday. That was maybe my best call of the week. That may have been my only good call of the week, actually. Oh, besides the Rams over. Rams over was my best call of the week. My second best call of the week was the Jets beating the Bills on Thursday Night Football. But I do believe the Bills are a relatively good team. Even watching that Jets game, there was a couple of dinks and bounces and bump and bad luck fumbles. And, there was enough kind of wonky crap that happened that I'm not like ready to laugh at the Bills as being frauds. I do think that they're legit. And if you're legit, and if you're, you're sitting right on the bubble of a playoff spot right now, and you have a home game against a dome team and you have 10 days rest, you win this game. And we will, expect an absolute you know, upper percentile effort out of these Bills in this game, and see if we can't see if we can't get them into one of these wild card spots in the AFC. I don't really have a whole lot else to go on for Week 10. I will say this:
we have a listener question.
Oh, what do you got?
We got Kelly from Scarborough, Ontario, was wondering why the hell we didn't talk about the Monday night game on the so, poor Canadian SOB listened to the whole thing again. Listen to the whole damn thing again, trying to find the Monday night take, which we didn't do. We usually do that on Mondays, even though we skipped a couple of Mondays. So we do have to touch on Green Bay, which is our disagreeing game, I guess.
Okay. Do you want to do that first, or do you want me to throw you a curveball about what to expect for the rest of the season?
Curveball me.
Okay. So as it sits right now, you know, we're halfway through the season. Granted, you know, we're week 9 out of 17, whatever. How do you see this playing out? AFC, NFC. Who's making the playoffs for you?
Oh, just exactly how it is right now. That's fine.
Oh, okay.
I really like, obviously, Homer, but I don't see Detroit or Green Bay without Rodgers making a run. So definitely the Vikings in. I don't think the Eagles can screw it up enough not to win that division. I look at the Rams' schedule. I think if the Seahawks needed to have that game to have a chance. I think
they needed it.
The Seahawks blew it, man. The division. I can see the Panthers. Panthers, Saints, Rams, Vikings, Seahawks. I think the Cowboys get left in the cold in the NFC. And then, obviously, Patriots, Chiefs, Steelers look like, you know, division winners. It's going to really, really see what Mariota can do the rest of the season, because they are not, even when they win, they're not that, like, they looked like a team that should have won that game by multiple touchdowns or points yesterday. But boy, the Titans let them right in the back door there too for the nasty push. Titans, Jags, I can see either one of those. And then I'm going to go Titans, Jags, Bills for the other playoff teams. Titans and Jags, I don't know who wins the division, but one of those gets in, and then Bills is the other wild card right now.
You know what? I think all around. Yeah, all around, that is a great looking set of 12 teams. I really don't have any strong disagreements with you on any of that. I like to get a wild card.
The suspension happening, so that's. It's not like they don't have other good running backs, but that's really tough on your psyche as a team to lose your star running back. So I can see the Cowboys falling back.
That is the one spot I'm kind of intrigued by. I kind of want to see. I mean, you know, granted, some of this is colored by my own personal what I am holding, and so you have to kind of look through that lens. But I'd love to see Carolina drop out of the picture, and I'd like to see Dallas get a wild card spot. I'd like to see Seattle get a wild card spot. I agree with you. The Rams are in absolutely prime position, and you look down the schedule, and the Rams and the Eagles and the Seahawks are all going to kind of trade wins and losses in a couple weeks here, and they'll kind of shuffle things a little bit. Minnesota and New Orleans are in absolutely prime positions to get home playoff games, which is huge for those two teams. And if you're looking in the futures market, you got to absolutely factor that in. If they're playing at home, those teams are going to be extremely tough to beat in the playoffs. I'm interested in the battle between New England and KC for what will likely be one bye, because I think Pittsburgh at this point is in the driver's seat for the one seed, I have to say. And granted, we have probably four more Ben Roethlisberger injuries to assess before the season's over. Ben injuries aside, Pittsburgh looks like they're going to be able to lock up a one, which means New England and KC are going to be going kind of flopping back and forth between the two and the three seed for the rest of the season. And if they end up tied, we all remember what happened week one. KC beat them, and I could see this finish.
That's another huge one.
KC
huge
two, New England three. Absolutely.
As far as and, first tiebreaker in the season.
Right, and you could have a situation where New England is in the three seed and has to play a wild card weekend. In which case, what's the worst case scenario for New England if they're home for Wild Card Weekend and Baltimore comes to town?
I was thinking the Bills.
The Bills, yeah. Well, they got to play the Bills twice, though.
A team that knows them, if they even at home, it's not like the Bills are unfamiliar going down to Foxborough.
Right, that's true.
How do you guys see it on the East Coast of Foxborough?
Dude, if Buffalo can beat New England twice in their upcoming games, then you could see that flip entirely. Yeah, they'll be Buffalo in third and New England in the wild card slot. That would be pretty interesting drama. Nice, okay, cool. All right, we're on the same page. We're on the same page with a lot of this stuff. Tennessee, Jacksonville, both to make the playoffs seems like a real possibility, which is crazy too. I'm ready to write off Oakland. I'm ready to write, off Denver. I'm ready to write off the Chargers. Although the Chargers, we didn't touch on the Chargers this week. They're going at Jacksonville. That's actually kind of a sneaky good game. Chargers coming off their bye. Chargers on the road. Jags coming off a massive win against Cincinnati. Jags -4. So if the Chargers can keep that with a field goal game, you may see a nice little cover by the Chargers this week. So, although I'm still a little butthurt from the Chargers not covering in New England, so we'll see if I can stomach
that. Actually, I need the Patriots. And I'm looking at my futures now. I kind of want the Patriots to win the East. I got a Patriots East.
I have a few.
Patriots win the East, Steelers win the North, and then the Colts and Broncos. Yeah. Don't win their divisions. That's almost a 2-1.
Oh, that's a beauty. That is a beauty. Good, right? Okay, cool. All right, let's talk about Monday. Let's post this pod, and we can enjoy this Monday Night Football game coming up pretty soon. Gaiman is setting up for an interesting spot to back the Packers for me. So I'm with the minority here. We're seeing right now. Brett Hundley and the Packers are very lightly backed, even though they've had a week to prepare for this game. The Detroit Lions played in primetime last week against the Steelers. We saw a game that they absolutely should have won absolutely should have gone over the total. But the Detroit Lions play called their way out of and field goal, go for it on fourth or kick a field goal decision, made their way out of a win at home against the Steelers last week. Now they head down to Green Bay. Detroit opened as a -2.5 point fave. It's now down to -2, even though 70% of the tickets are sitting on Detroit, which means either the books are taking a position here or there is some heavy money on my side with the Green Bay Packers in this spot. I like the Packers mostly because of the rest they gotten from the bye. I thought they actually should have won and covered that game against the Saints 2 weeks ago, right before their bye. They were a little conservative on offense with their play calling because of the untested quarterback. I'm expecting them to have some pretty unique packages in play now with the extra time to prepare here. And I think you see kind of a game where people are like, wait, is Brett Hundley good? ? And most of that's born out of the fact that Detroit gives up just bonkers plays in the passing game, a la Juju Schuster-Smith taking it 97 yards against them when they absolutely needed to stop. The other angle I got for you is I love that you got a pretty healthy Green Bay D-line going up against a pretty suspect Lions O-line. And on top, to top it all off, you have a Lions coach who should be fired any day now and will undoubtably make
extended.
Some.
They would never extend a guy and then fire him in the same year, he said to Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, right. That's never happened except for last year. So I'm hopeful that maybe it doesn't even come into play. Maybe Green Bay wins this thing wire to wire. But I'm looking for a Packers win tonight. I'm looking for a Lions letdown, and I'm ready to bury the Packers and bury the Lions. I'm sorry, I'm ready to bury the Lions for the season. And hopefully something that Caldwell does encourages them to pull the ripcord on him before the Giants fired McAdoo, and before the, although I have a bet on McAdoo to be First Coast Fire too. I picked Caldwell on the top.
I think your futures. you're letting your futures get in your head. You need Detroit to lose so bad right now.
I need them to lose so bad. It's true.
I went back and forth on this total too because I think both defenses, especially both defensive backfields, aren't very good. Obviously, you got to give the lean at quarterback to Stafford over a pretty much unknown, you know, quantity right now in Hundley. I think the game plan for Green Bay has to be to run. You know, they have to, to not rely on him. What's like Adam Jones, Aaron Jones? Why can't I think of this guy's name right now?
Yeah.
I think he is going to have a big game. So I wanted to play over because of the bad defenses, but Aaron Jones toting the rock a bunch. Maybe, I don't know Montgomery's status with his ribs, but I think he kind of got played out of a job by Jones being so successful. I think Green Bay runs the ball a lot. I think definitely Detroit can throw against this lackluster secondary, which – for the 15th straight year has lost a bunch of players to injury. Green Bay's offensive line, I don't know if they're going to hold up real good. It'll really come down to Hundley doing well under pressure and getting it to, you know, they have very good receivers, but he still has to get it to them. I'm still on Detroit here. I just got to go with the experience. I think it's a similar game to the Saints game where it's just maybe Green Bay overall, everything about it, they're better. They just don't have their quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So this is setting up also. I don't want to step on your calls there. I think those are all very legit points. This is setting up as a very pros versus Joes game. Mm-hmm. You got 70% of tickets on Detroit minus two, 70% of tickets on over 42.5. But clearly the sharp money was in early on Green Bay plus 2.5 and under 43. So interesting game. Let's go Pack here. Pack win. I'm looking at barely having a plus money situation through 9 weeks of the NFL, which is not a place I'm real comfortable being in early November, but we are where we are. So let's wrap this thing, man. Great pod. Have a great Monday. Have a great week, and we will touch base on Wednesday and get deep into all of this week 10.
Deep into week 10.